Beasley. And council, I want to compliment you for being here early and on time, and I suppose you don't deserve as big a compliment since you were on the prior case, but I certainly do appreciate you coming early, as you're supposed to do. You each will have 15 minutes for your oral argument this morning. The 5 minutes will be reserved for rebuttal by the appellant. And please introduce yourself prior to beginning your oral argument, and let us know who you represent.
Thank you.
And the appellant may
proceed. Rich Kinley, appearing for the appellant, Andre Beasley.
Yes, and you can come up and do it at the podium if you want. And
River Keelan for the state of Minnesota.
All right, thank you. And we are very delighted to be here.
I'm glad I didn't try to say Paul. Council and court, thanks for the opportunity. My brief challenge, two issues. One was the Franks hearing. In essence, it seemed like I ended up doing a de facto Franks hearing in front of the court at the time that warrant that I was challenging. I don't feel that was proper. I feel that at least the issue of the
private. But you don't cite any authority. Are you talking about, again, hearing both matters, but do you have any authority that says
I looked high and low for a case, and I was told there was a case on point, and I couldn't find out Westlaw with 2-3 days of research. So I don't know that there's a case on point because I couldn't find it.
And as far as any motion to have him recused from the case, that didn't happen?
No, I asked for him. I asked for another judge to hear the matter.
But informally, not by motion.
Correct, Your Honor. That is correct. In essence, I would ask, well, first off, I'd like the court to, I should address the second issue first.
Let me ask you something.
Go ahead, sir.
Could you have filed a notice of removal?
Only with cause. The judge mentioned you've been assigned to that case for 8 months, 9 months, by that time, maybe longer.
But isn't that your argument that for cause was the fact that he was the issuing magistrate issuing the search warrant? I mean, isn't that what you're trying to argue, why you felt it was inappropriate for Judge Benchu to rule on the Franks hearing?
Well, what I stood right there at earlier hearings, and I'd been told that another judge would hear it. And I would just assume, and then maybe I screwed up and my client suffered for that, but I had been told by different judges that a different judge would hear that issue. And in fact, at the hearing, the transcript, which I reviewed, Judge Benchu asked, well, who determines that? And I think Mr. Frank said, well, I think you do if you choose to, Your Honor. And that's when it was decided at that point. That was after I had made both a written and an oral request for another judge to hear that issue. But that was my understanding. And again, I hope it wasn't all in my head that my Frank's hearing.
Clear, you did not make a motion to remove.
I did not, Your Honor. I'm not going to read my brief into the record. That would waste everybody's time. I'll finish up with the Franks issue. Judge Benchu, who I have quite a bit of respect for, had seen both the case of the son of my client, the Avion Beasley, and that is cited in my brief. He'd seen a lot of things, which I think may have been beyond the scope of the warrant, but I don't feel that he got the straight, complete picture of what had happened, that there had been an attack by men with pipes against two individuals who fired a gun at somebody trying to bash his head in with a pipe. That was clear, and there wasn't multiple shots at people running away. They retreated, and for that,
well, there was one witness who suggested that there might be one or more shots.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was in the application, but the video, which was reviewed by Officer Mestermacher, if I pronounced it right, shows one shot while you're being attacked, not multiple shots at fleeing individuals. He had reviewed that before the application for the search warrant was made. That's kind of the crux. I got
you saying that once he reviewed it, he knew there was only one shot. He should not have said in the application or the affidavit that there was a shot.
Exactly.
It made a difference.
I think it does.
What did?
Well, it's one, it's all about the reasonable use of force. If an individual is attacked and uses, you know, deadly force against deadly force.
But you were just talking about probable cause here for.
We are, but there has to be.
What difference does it make as to probable cause?
The warrant has to assert that the crime has happened. An individual defending himself with reasonable force is a crime.
One shot is not sufficient for reasonable belief that a crime is committed?
I don't feel it was in a circumstance. I think it was portrayed to the district court as multiple shots at fleeing individuals. And the transcripts from the hearings with the district court, the court states that there were multiple shots at fleeing individuals, and that was the basis for this warrant. And I don't feel that was an accurate depiction of what actually happened that day, especially when the officer states he'd seen the video.
But it wasn't there a statement by a witness that he thought at least one shot was fired, possibly more? And so the report of the officer was at least one shot was fired. I mean, why wouldn't that be sufficient to, I mean, because the officer doesn't have to resolve the issue in applying for a warrant. All he has to show is what evidence he has that justifies probable cause for the issuance of the warrant, right?
Yes, but a crime has to be alleged. The warrant application doesn't cite any crime. It just says there was an altercation. It doesn't cite assault. It doesn't cite any specific crime. And I think if the facts had been more accurately portrayed in that application for the warrant, it would have made a difference. I feel that one shot in defense is a far cry from several shots at fleeing individuals. And again, the court, district court makes those comments in subsequent hearings that that's why a crime had been committed.
But firing in the direction of somebody, it is an assault without much more discussion, isn't it? And there may be a defense to it. It may be self-defense, but it's not for the author to decide and try the case on somebody applying for an act.
Well, the officer saw the video. The video is very clear what actually happened. And I don't think.
Well, that's my point. Even if he said one shot, that would have been sufficient for probable cause. So what's the harm? The question is whether it's sufficient for probable cause or not.
Well, the Adrian Beasley at that time was not charged. The videos were reviewed, and there was no charge of second degree assault. That came much, much later. I cite that. There was no charge of felony possession of a firearm. I think the only thing he was arrested for was that he had domestic, and this is my client's son, Deavion, not Andre Beasley. He had a domestic, so he got charged with a gross misdemeanor for having a possession of a firearm. He was not initially charged with second degree assault because the officers did have a chance in the county attorney's office to look at.
But does that have any impact on whether there's probable cause?
I believe it does. If looking at the actual facts in the video.
Now let's assume the officer would have just paraphrased or played the video for the trial judge. And you're saying the trial judge would not have had probable cause to issue a search warrant?
I believe that, yes. I can explain why. The judge would have seen what actually happened. The judge would not have been led to believe that, because the second that an individual goes beyond reasonable force, a crime has been committed. Once somebody is fleeing, you can't keep shooting at them. But you can use reasonable force under the statute. And I don't think that the use of reasonable force, when getting your head hit with a pipe, I don't think that is a crime. I don't believe it is.
Well, you know, but the judge in the search warrant, the affidavit, described that the two males that assaulted the Avion and the other person with they had a crowbar, and so the judge reviewing the search warrant knew there had been the initial attack.
Correct.
The issue is you have someone in public shooting at people who are running away, and the search warrant says there's at least one shot because there's at least a witness who thought there was more than one shot.
But
so why wouldn't that be sufficient for a judge to to issue a search warrant to figure out who was shooting this gun. And you'll agree that it involves more people. I mean, when you're shooting a gun in a public place, it involves the safety of more people than the ones that are running.
Obviously, yeah. There's a mischaracterization. There was one shot fired. And it happened not while the people were running away. It happened during the attack. It was done with the reason self-defense. I don't believe that should be a basis. If Giuliani continued to fire at these individuals as they ran away, obviously that is a crime that goes beyond the use of reasonable force in self-defense. And I believe that is how the matter was portrayed to the district court, and that's what the district court relied upon in issuing this warrant. Further, and I've attached it in the brief, I won't beat a dead horse, there apparently is a large interstate drug investigation centered around these individuals, my client and his son. You can be heard on the audio, you couldn't wait to get for a reason to get into the house. That I believe that this was, I mean, the incident, what happened. I think that what did happen was mischaracterized the district court to use as a basis to get into Andre Beasley's house and search that house, looking for drugs or proof of some interstate drug trafficking. And that was admitted. All the subsequent warrants go on at length about this big drug investigation that was happening. And I feel that's a material omission. I think that was known when the initial warrant was applied for. So I think there was both a mischaracterization of what actually happened, and there was an omission of material facts.
Well, the omission of material facts would have supported the search. If it hadn't been admitted, that would have supported the search, would it not?
It might have gone to the motive to mischaracterize in the first place, Your Honor. There was a reason to want to search the residence beyond what actually happened and was described in the initial application.
So. But again, I mean, the officer reported that the witness's statement that just happened to be there said that these males were running away from the shooter unarmed and had their backs turned to him. Now, to the extent you're arguing that the surveillance film shows something different than that, is it up to the officer to resolve all that?
Well, the officer saw the video.
I mean, the officer's just reporting what the witness said and what evidence he had.
No, Your Honor, I don't believe that's true.
Okay.
The witness said what the witness said, but right. The officer, prior to getting the warrant, watched the video, saw what happened. He didn't just rely on what was told by the witness. And actually having seen the video, we're all aware that eyewitnesses can tell three different versions from three different angles. The video showed what actually happened. The officer had a chance to review that before applying for the warrant. And the officer knew from watching the video. That's why I feel there's a misrepresentation. If I may go on to the sufficiency of the evidence for the conviction.
And as I understand it, the video shows that they had their backs turned and they're moving away, right?
The shot happened while they were facing and attacking. No shots happened while they were turned the other way. There was one shot. It happened during the attack while Diagon was being attacked. There were no follow-up shots. But at that point, they ran, and there were no more shots. There was one shot. If I may, Your Honor.
You may.
With regard to the sufficiency of the evidence, I've laid out the best of my ability in the brief, but I'd like to touch on a few points. The state argued 99.9998% of the world's population to be excluded. I would just ask, Your Honors, respectfully, to review the what I laid out in my brief as to what was actually said in the BCA reports. I tried to cite it and lay it out to as best as I can. But I do not believe the reports provided by the BCA from the DNA testing support the findings of the district court. And with that, if there's no more questions, I'll end my. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Good May it please the court. The burden in this case rests on the defendant to make a substantial preliminary showing to warrant a Franks hearing. And that simply wasn't done in this case. That showing has a couple components. The first is that there has to be a reckless or intentional misrepresentation or omission of facts in that search warrant. And that simply was never alleged in this case. There's nothing in the record demonstrating that Officer Messenacher or Sergeant Walton's search warrant affidavit failed to contain any information or misrepresented any information in an intentional or reckless disregard of the facts.
Well, I think counsel's arguing, though, that the officer had the video of this incident, which basically refuted what was reported by this witness, and this court for that argument, they noted that they weren't even charged with an assault or in light. I mean, how do you address that?
Your Honor, the officer included the description of the video as the officer reviewed it in the search warrant application. He included the description, including the respective attack with the pipe or the bar. He described what he observed in that video. There was no omission there. There wasn't that the video was left out in its entirety. The officer reviewed it and included.
But he overstated the fact that there was more than one shot.
Your Honor, the officer stated that there was at least one shot, and the witness stated that one or more shots was fired. It was never stated that there was multiple shots fired, only that the officer reviewed the video and saw that there was at least one, which is not a misrepresentation of the facts. Maybe he observed one, maybe he observed more, but he described it as at least one.
Does the video depict a firing of the gun in the direction of the two assaulting males who have their backs turned and seem to be running away?
And Your Honor, I guess I would refer to this court to the record before it. That video, I have reviewed the video, but what I state isn't part of the record. My review of the video isn't part of the four corners of the search warrant. And the burden is essentially on the defense to make that preliminary showing. The video isn't as clear as being represented. The video is a gas station camera that does not capture the entirety of the events. The officers include the eyewitness testimony. The officers include their review of that video in the warrant. There is no indication here that there was a misrepresentation or intentional omission on the part of the officers.
The counsel said that the shooting took place during the altercation, not as the two parties were leaving.
And part of that, Your Honor, is that it shouldn't really matter. Search warrant is to
whether it matters or not, completely for us to decide.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
So the question is that an accurate statement that the video shows that the shots were fired during the altercation, that the one shot was fired during the altercation, as opposed to with the time when people are leaving the altercation?
And Your Honor, I caution the court that my statements are part of the record, but my review of the video was that it was unclear whether it was fired as part of that altercation or after the individual was fleeing. I believe the video, the individual was out of frame at the time the shot is fired. And I don't think the determination can be made at that point whether the shot occurred with what direction that person was facing. I believe that eyewitness testimony was that the person was fleeing at the time. That was included in the search warrant. And the point of the search warrant is to further investigate whether a crime has been committed, trying to determine whether that individual was charged at the time, whether there's an affirmative defense to a crime, whether what crime they may have been committing at that time. There's a plethora of crimes that may have applied in this case, an eligible possession of a firearm, a second degree assault, reckless discharge of a firearm, terrorist threats with a dangerous weapon. It's really not for the officer to make that call. And in the heat of the moment, trying to get a search warrant drafted to continue his investigation on the day that the incident occurred. Regarding Judge Benchoop hearing that issue, this case was a preliminary showing for a Franks hearing. This case wasn't a Franks hearing itself. Judge Benchu correctly determined that defense had failed to make that preliminary showing, that there was any reckless or intentional omission or misrepresentation of the facts in that search warrant, and specifically explained that had a Franks hearing been necessary, he would review whether it was necessary for him to remove himself and to have another judge make that or have that hearing. Because that preliminary showing was unsuccessful, that it never progressed to that point, and it was unnecessary for the judge to remove himself to conduct further review. Regarding that preliminary showing, it's important to understand that the offer of proof must be something more than a conclusory. The fact that there was a side investigation, whether there was or was not, is essentially the epitome of a conclusory allegation that investigation had anything to do with the facts that were presented before the court in that search warrant application. There was that shooting at Pete's Place West. That vehicle was located at that residence. They interviewed witnesses. They reviewed that video. There was essentially nothing tying that series of events to any sort of other subsequent or concurrent investigation at the time. Whether there even was an investigation is completely conclusory at this point, or speculative. And that simply is insufficient to warrant a Franks hearing. Something more is necessary. And the key term there is substantial. It's a substantial preliminary showing, not simply just claims on behalf of the defense arguing that a Franks hearing is necessary. In this case, there's also absolutely sufficient evidence to affirm the district court's determination of guilt in this case. Not only was there that DNA evidence, but there was also the statements of Mr. Beasley himself. It was relied on by the district court in determining that Mr. Beasley was in constructive possession of the firearms that were in that safe.
Can we talk about the charge relative to the ammunition found in the blue Honda Accord? I mean, what evidence is there supporting the conviction for that evidence?
Well, remember, the test is whether there's a strong possibility that Mr. Beasley was conscious of the exercise of dominion over that area. So vehicle parked, it's Mr. Beasley's vehicle parked in his driveway at his residence. And I think it's inferable from that circumstance that he was exercising control.
And the phone again where?
Under a floor mat in the sedan parked at his residence.
Where in the floor mat?
I guess I don't have the specific location that was found under the floor mat. It was just described as being located under the floor mat. But in addition to that ammunition that was located in that sedan, there was also the ammunition located in the master bedroom of Mr. Beasley's residence on a shelf in that bathroom. And then there was also the guns and ammunition located in that safe that was in Mr. Beasley's closet in his located bedroom as well. The evidence supports Mr. Beasley's constructive possession of that. The DNA specifically isn't supportive of that. 99.999999998% of the general population can be excluded from that DNA sample, but Mr. Beasley was unable to be excluded from that sample.
You're talking about the ammunition found in the master bedroom or in the Honda?
This is specifically referring to the DNA found in the .38 caliber within the safe, Your Honor. And on top of that, extremely large percentage of individuals that can be excluded from having contributed to that DNA match. Mr. Beasley was aware of what was in the safe. He was aware of where the guns had come from. He was aware of who owned the guns. He essentially admitted that he was keeping one of the weapons for someone who was incarcerated at the time of this offense. Those are all very strong indicators that Mr. Beasley was aware that those firearms were there and was consciously exercising dominion control of them.
What about the ammunition found in the master bath? What was there other than proximity connecting him to that ammunition?
This court can look to the totality of the circumstances and determine that Mr. Beasley had these firearms in these safes, in this safe, and he was exercising dominion control over those firearms, and look to that and find it reasonable that that is an inference this court can look at and determine whether he was also in possession of the ammunition scattered all over the residence, the ammunition in the vehicle, the ammunition in the bathroom, the ammunition that's in the safe.
Did the ammunition in the bathroom match any of the firearms?
I guess I don't have the answer for the court off the top of my head. But then it's also indicative that he is exercising command control over that ammunition as well. The ammunition in the safe was a mixed amount of ammunition. Either some boxes and a Crown Royal bag.
Let's read them, yeah. Whether or not the ammunition found in the bathroom matched the firearms or in the matched the other ammunition that's found in the safe.
Now, I don't know if it specifically matched here. I do know that there's a wide variety of ammunition located, including the boxes in the safe and a bag of mixed ammunition. So I don't know if it specifically matched.
I mean, what else is there other than proximity to support any link between Mr. Beasley and this ammunition found in the master bathroom?
Your Honor, it's a master bath that is connected to Mr. Beasley's personal bedroom.
Any evidence that he was using that bathroom?
I believe his wife lived there as well, Your Honor, so it would be arguably a shared bathroom. So I guess that'd be another. So there'd be the proximity, but there'd also be that those firearms continue to be safe. And all of the evidence tying Mr. Beasley to those firearms would arguably also, because if he's admitted those possessing firearms, it's reasonable that he's also possessing ammunition located nearby as well. Not necessarily just in the safe itself, but in that bathroom or in his vehicle as well. I guess that would be the evidence that I think is indicative of his ownership beyond simply your proximity. Mr. Beasley was also wearing the money in the safe as well.
Well, that he said was his, though.
Correct. But that's indicative that he had access to that safe, that his personal possessions were in that safe, that it's not simply his wife's safe. He's keeping his items in that safe. Again, indicative that the firearms in that safe were something that he was exercising conscious control over. The strongest evidence is, of course, Mr. Beasley's own statements that he was aware of the nature of the firearms, where they come from. He was essentially custodial of one while the individual was in prison. That's the strongest evidence that Mr. Beasley was aware of those items and, you know, exercising conscious control over them. Maybe that concludes my evidence.
Again, is that the ammunition found in the bathroom, 9mm, or do you recall whether any of the firearms, any of the firearms were 9mm?
I believe one was, Your Honor, one was a .380 and one was a 9mm, but I'm going off of memory in that. If there are no further questions, I conclude the argument.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No rebuttal, Your Honors. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much. We will take the matter under advisement and get the decision out within the statutory period of time.
Thank you, Judge.